Thank you for You want this one?
Hi, I'm here. I'm feeding the dog while I'm doing this. So anyway, yeah, she's on some geriatric pills and she needs a noon pill. So I want to get some your carrot sticks. But she's managing, so yeah, that's what we're doing. So let me put you in a minute.
That's what counts. All right, I gotta get something. Not on mute.
Hello, Karen.
Good morning. Well, I was going to say good morning. Are we just about end of that?
We're still in morning. You're good.
Okay. Good. How are you? Your hair looks sport and cute.
Oh, thank you. I got it cut Monday.
Okay.
Also, I just got out of the shower, so it's still wet.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
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 Am I iPad changing, but it's still going down. I don't know. Uh-oh. I hope I make it through the whole time. It's weird. Let me switch.
Right, because you just did a spin, a 360, Phyllis.
I did, but this way I don't have to hold it in my lap. I can prop it up on a lamp.
Speaker. Hello.
Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
What are you doing? How's everybody doing?
We missed you.
We did miss you.
Yeah.
Aww, nice. You have a good week?
Yeah.
I needed a little downtime. But you know, this is practice you can do. It's kind of like exercise. It's always easier when you have other people doing it with you, but you can do this. That you can do this.
Karen Singer, I want to tell you, when you said that Marvin cut your hair,
he did not cut my hair.
Mm-mm. Okay. My husband cut my hair yesterday. I could not stand it any longer. And it was two choices. And he did, I think, a pretty good job.
So, good job.
I said, it's either you or the hairdresser, and I'm nervous about not her, but the people that go there. That, you know, so anyway, so that was my happy point yesterday. When the kids saw me on Zoom last night, Benji noticed right away. Danny didn't get it, but Benji goes, you got a haircut.
I think I'm throwing mine for a while.
Oh my, it's getting so long.
The advantage. In the summer, just put it up. So at this point, I kind of figure I'm going to just deal with it in the fall. I'll just put it up.
I know. Every day I'm debating. It's just getting too long for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the summer, the longer it is in the summer, the easier it is to just wear it up.
It's also shorter. For me, it's not as hard to get my waves out. It's easier for me to straighten, so, because there's more weight on it. So,
or you could just do that.
No, mine aren't as pretty as yours. Mine are pretty ugly.
Oh, I bet they're beautiful. But you know, to be fair, some of curls are the stuff. I can't believe we're talking about this and we're being recorded. some of curls is the stuff you put in your hair.
Well,
my friend would say it's all about product.
Ah, there you go. My hair has never had, they're kind of like ugly waves in various places.
I didn't think I had curly hair.
Really?
No, I thought it was just kind of a little weirdly wavy and that was it. And my friend who has curly hair, she's like, no, it's actually curly hair. That was in 2004.
Wow. Actually,
before them with straight hair or like. All right, so let's get comfortable. I want to welcome Elise because I haven't seen you on this before, so it's so nice to see you.
Hi, Elise.
Hey, Ruth.
Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
So, blessings to all of you. So, you know, find a comfortable spot where you are. Part of, you know, a lot of our mindfulness practice, we talk about recognizing how we're distracted. And sometimes our bodies actually distract us because they're not comfortable. So we want to take that experience of distraction out. And without judgment, like, you know, you may be in a weird position that's comfortable and that's just the position that you need to be in today, right? It's not that it's weird. It's just where your body is in this moment. I was thinking a lot. So in addition to having a few down days, my Cantor's conference was scheduled to be this week in San Diego, which of course didn't happen. But we had 2.5 days of things online this week, which was actually pretty cool. Not the same, but it was really pretty cool. and my longtime study partner led a workshop. And so I was thinking a lot on, not on mindfulness, but on some of the Hasidic texts that were that he and I study together. And so there was an opportunity for some, for a little bit of practice during these few days. And so I was thinking about, you know, I talk a lot about breath, and meditation talks a lot about breath, but I talk about us using our breath a lot. And so I was thinking about, like, I was just thinking about that. So, you know, why do we use our breath so much in this practice? And I think there's a few reasons. One is, you know, breath is always present. So it's actually a pretty solid anchor. We're God willing, always breathing. And the reality is that our bodies are breathing even when we're not thinking about it. Another thing that I thought about is that, in fact, breath is always moving. And while some meditation practice aims for stillness, I think the mindfulness that I practice and that I'm exploring with you is about how to be present in what is, and we're not still. Like, we're moving, right? We're moving in life. This is not a practice to go be able to, you know, live in isolation, but to be able to live with what is around us. And so the experience of both the breath as movement and as being anchor, as being paying attention to that breath, gives us a place that holds us in stillness, but is also always moving. So I think I kind of felt like there was a piece of that movement of breath that's important as well in mindfulness. Betty, yeah.
I also wanted to say that the breath is a gateway to the autonomic nervous system, because when we breathe slowly, it increases parasympathetic tone, kind of slows us down. And just the opposite, when we breathe fast, it speeds us up, and it has an effect on the autonomic nervous system. So,
yeah. And so it's a way, that's actually a little bit to my third point, but I hadn't thought about that. But there is that connection between body and spirit.
Yeah.
There is in the Hebrew, right? Nishama is our breath, and nishima is our breath, and nishama is our soul. So yeah. Word-wise, body-spirit connection.
Yeah.
What Betty described as how it affects our body. But breath also, breath sets the conditions for awe, for wonder. When we can be with this movement of breath that happens, right? That it happens, like, amazingly, that it just keeps happening. When we can focus on our breath, which is familiar, which is like there all the time, but in a new way, right? We can be connected in a sense. We are recreating that experience of wonder, of opening us up to what is in front of us in a new way. And so every time we bring our attention back to the breath, that return, right? The Jewish idea of return, of teshuva, right? While we have a big day or a big time of teshuva once a year, Jewish tradition teaches us that teshuva, right? That returning to our best selves, turning away from the things we don't want to be, is possible all the time, right? A practice of return to ourselves, of return to wonder, of return to wholeness, of return to our best selves. And so that return of breath all the time, connecting to our breath in a practice, in a conscious way, not just it, right? So it happens whether we think about it or not, but paying attention to that is a gateway. I love that word, gateway, Betty, thank you. Is a gateway, right, to connecting to meaning in our lives, right? As we rest on the flow of the breath, as we witness the stream of thoughts of our mind without grasping at them directly, the breath serves as so much more than just a focus, right? It serves as this sense of movement, as this sense of turning, as this sense of renewal, right? If we pay attention to it, of being renewed in every moment, so that then we can notice what is happening more clearly, right? Then we can watch what arises and passes for us so that we can then be better attuned. There was a psalm verse that was brought to my attention this week. It's from Psalm 46. In verse 11, the Hebrew says, Harpu ud'u ki anochi Elohim. It's translated often as, it can be translated as be still and know that I am God. Be still. But the Hebrew word harpu comes from the root resh peh hey, for our Hebrew learners out there, which actually means to let go or to release. So if we were to think of this verb harpu ud'u, like let go and know that I am God. Like, how can we let go of our struggle? Letting go of struggle doesn't mean we disengage from life, right? But the idea of surrendering struggle, of surrendering tension, of surrendering the drive to get things right, right? To be in control, can create a different kind of spaciousness that then allows the breath to bring us to a place of awareness and awe, of miracle, of God's presence. So harpu ud'u ki anochi Elohim, be still, let go, and know that I am God. So I thought we would sit with that for a few moments. Okay, so I'm gonna mute you all, though it seems quiet, but I'll do that anyway. And I'll mute myself too. So that way you can just sit in whatever, only your own noise of distraction. So anything come up for anybody? Want to share questions, thoughts? Probably a little bit longer. I'm like extending our sitting times a little bit. I don't know if that was more or less uncomfortable, if you fell asleep, which is all okay. Phyllis, wait, you're muted. Let's see if I can unmute. I can't unmute you.
I think I'm on now.
Yep.
Okay. I think I sound better muted, but anyway. Not only does the breathing make me feel calmer, but I also experience a deep sense of well-being. And I don't know if that's physiological or spiritual, but it's a good feeling.
That's great.
I'd say it's probably both, right? I mean, there are autonomic things that happen from breathing and oxygenation and like all of that stuff, and slowing our breathing down that slows our systems down. But I think it draws into something very deep inside of us, that when we stop, right, be still, is right, that's some of the translation, be still, so that we can sense God's presence, that sense of well-being, that sense of deep wholeness. And then we can see clearly, right? When we get there, there's like a different sort of vision. There's a different, we have a different kind of clarity that we can draw upon. Thank you for sharing that. Anybody fall asleep?
Okay. No, but I was
too. Like, remember, part of this practice is like whatever arises, to kind of come back to the breath, is to not be judgmental about it, right? We're just noticing. We're just seeing what's there. But it gives us the space and the time and the ability to like actually see what arises. And maybe it's that we need to sleep. And that's okay too.
I just wanted to ask about which psalm was that that you quoted from it? It was beautiful.
46 verse 11.
46 verse 11, okay.
So, you know, we sit, this week the Torah portion is this odd, this interesting portion about how blessings arise. It's the story of Balak and Balaam, and, you know, Balak the Moabite king, Balaam the non-Israelite prophet who ends up blessing the Israelites. And whose words we draw upon, Matovu Ahalecha Yaakov Mishkanotecha Yisrael. How good are your tents, O Jacob, your dwelling places, O Israel. So I'm thinking also this week a lot about, you know, just the whole notion of blessing, of this idea of breath, of noticing, right, how the breath moves, how there's this inner release, like kind of like you described, Phyllis. And how with that breath, how can we invite all that is inside of us to notice it as blessing, rather than judging it as things we want to maybe we would normally push away, right? When we can recognize all that arises, it has the possibility of blessing. And so, you know, as we're here together each week, and for me personally, it's like noticeable that it's on Thursdays because I'm already getting ready for Shabbat. So for personally, like this is a bit of my own Shabbat preparation with all of you, sort of recognizing what I'm carrying each week. And so I think about like some of the different voices that any of us might be carrying at this time. And somehow they're all like the cacophony of them all speaking to one another, like our fearful voices. The voice that says, oh my God, I'm coughing a lot. Do I have the virus? Like, you know, or the fearful one that says, you know, or are, you know, worried about parents and loved ones who are far away. You know, the fearful voice that worries that society is falling apart. The angry voices at ourselves, right? Don't, the voice that responds to that says, well, don't fear, don't panic. It's not good for anybody. the reasonable voice that says, you know, I'm going to do my part to help society, to make myself safe and to make others safe. You know, the loving or connected voice that says, you know, we're all in this together, right? We're connected to one another. The vulnerability that, you know, is remembering and thinking about our family and our loved ones, wanting to see them. The moments of being just easygoing, like looking out and going, oh, it's a beautiful sunny day. It's, you know, I'm enjoying being home today. I'm sitting outside. I can wear t-shirts. The sun is shining. Like, you know, we have those voices too. Like all of those things that are, or, you know, and then the list doer voice, right? All the things we either have to do or can't do or want to do, or how are we going to do them? And so, you know, some of this practice is recognizing like that cacophony that happens inside of us. And I think about sometimes like these voices like elbowing one another off the stage, feeling very crowded inside. And so this mindfulness practice, this sitting, this using the breath to access a place of deeper well-being, of clarity, of using it as an anchor to let our soul be more present, like in that, as we sit with the breath and notice these different voices that are shoving onto the stage of our mind, that we can in fact become like a loving director of the voices, inviting each voice to be present on stage, listening to its, recognizing its experience, letting all the other voices like sit and listen and create kind of a spaciousness for all of that instead of the chaos of it. And that we can like almost turn our inner narrative into its own compassionate listening to ourselves, without judging, without saying what we should or shouldn't be thinking or feeling, like it's just what's there, right? Making room in ourselves for all of those voices, all of those parts, all of the experiences, all of the thoughts and the distractions that are arising in us, that it's okay for all of that to be there, to notice it, to see it, to know that it arises and passes. So the Baal Shem Tov teaches that that we are where our minds are, right? Like that's where we are. And so this practice, this work, is to help our minds be in the best place they can be so that we can be in the best place that we can be, right? If we're distracted, then we're not necessarily we're not seeing or being as clear and as anchored and as rooted as we possibly could be. So, let's sit again. So, sort of taking the ideas of all of these voices of being of a stillness that has movement to it, right? Our breath, we're sitting in stillness, but our breath is moving. So we're not frozen in time. As the breath moves, we can see what arises that we could perhaps be in a clearer place, in a deeper place, in a quieter place, so that we can actually hear what is arising inside of us and recognize it and let it just be there as part of us. So I invite you to again sit comfortably. I may give you a little bit of a guiding in this one, and then we'll sit a little bit more in silence. So just as your breath, as you're breathing out, breathing in, don't force the breath, like let it be at its own rhythm. But on the inhalations, sort of recognize how it fills you, how it settles you, how it brings spaciousness on those inhalations. How it in fact protects you, offers you respite. And when you're exhaling, when you feel that breath release, right? It's not so much a forced exhale, but the breath releases. The breath flows in, that's the movement, and the breath flows out. So on those inflows, the protection and respite, and on the outflows, release, releasing the things that bind you. And an anchor is a settling, but not a restraint. And so you can release those restraints. And the breath rises and passes. And just as the breath rises and passes, everything rises and passes. And things will creep in. Thoughts will creep in. Thoughts about what we're doing now. Thoughts about what you need to do later. And let them rise. Watch them arise. Notice them. Recognize their familiarity. And allow them to pass. And as you continue to notice the flow of breath in and out, see your experience right now. And let go of any judging voice. It might be telling you what to think, and just recognize that familiarity of that voice. You might be distracted wondering what others are thinking or feeling, whether sitting is easier or harder for them or for you. And just notice that as your experience. No judgment. Our freedom and our settling come when we can bring our attention to something without judgment. Give ourselves a break from our judging minds. And just return to the breath, the anchor, the constant movement in this moment, again and again. So I'm curious. Have you... Have any of you used... When have been other times that you've, even for a moment, sort of tried out? Have you any other practice time, like besides when we're gathering, or has anybody found sort of even just the idea of taking a breath before, like you're facing something? Just Linda.
Well, I know when I was working and I'd have a stressful situation, sometimes I would take a long way to walk to the bathroom, and then I would just stop and pause and breathe. And I try to do it now when I can't get back to sleep or something, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, I wake up, go to the bathroom, and then don't go back to sleep right away. So I try doing, my girlfriend said 4-7-8, four in, hold for seven, out for eight. And it helps you distract your brain a little bit to think about your breathing. You're not worrying about the other 20 things that you're supposed to worry about. So I think it does help. It helps you know that you're alive. And, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you're still breathing and you're not sick. And that's to be grateful for, that you know, you're fine and your family is fine.
I'm with Linda. I've been doing it for years. I learned transcendental meditation when I was in college. So although I don't practice it, I found it was one of the ways when I couldn't sleep or my mind was really racing. I use that. Now that I've learned more of the breathing, I also use the breathing, so I'll use a combination of all of that to be able to fall back asleep or just to fall asleep.
Shirley, you're muted. Shirley, you're muted. Maybe I can, there you go.
Press the right button. I use the breathing quite often when my body does its weird thing that it does since this illness. The breathing technique seems to calm and relax. And I've done yoga, so I was very familiar with that. You know, doing yoga for several years. And that seems to help, but sometimes my mind goes elsewhere. Like today, I'm looking out at the window at these clouds and try to imagine myself in the cloud. That's what I was trying to do, but it's the breathing, I think, that is more calming for me.
Karen?
I am not a fan of going to the dentist, and I have actually found that if I can get myself in a different zone by realizing that my body is getting really tense and just concentrating on the breathing, it helps a lot. So that's not a spiritual experience, but it's definitely, the breathing has helped me, one of the places.
Well, it is in a way, right? The breath reminds us, like the spiritual part of breathing is that everything arises and passes. So even the dentist, like, it will be over, right? That you can, we cultivate in Musar, we would talk about, right, that maybe the capacity of savlanut, to bear the present circumstance until the time to act, which will be when you're done and you can get out of the chair, right? So, And part of, I find sometimes that when we try to push away the things we don't want, they just come back at us harder. Whether it's pushing, you know, whether it's avoiding an unwanted experience or an unwanted thought or too many thoughts, right? All of those distractions that often when we try and just put up a wall and say, I'm not letting you in, it's just going to find its way around. And so this kind of practice of breathing and sort of, you know, I talked about earlier, like welcoming all of those voices, but sort of letting, instead of them being a cacophony that overwhelm us, to be able to allow to see each of those things, each of those unwanted or unpleasant experiences that will arise and pass, and sort of go, okay, like, oh yeah, I know that one, right? Familiar. Oh yeah, okay. And letting it be allows it to, I think, a little bit easier arise and pass, to dissipate. That when we fight it or shun it, it tends to come back. It just tends to keep coming at us. And so the breath allows it to be like the anchor that we can then see as the rhythm of the breath arising and passing. I mean, that's yoga too, surely, right? You know, a good yoga teacher will always say, like, your body is where your body is today, right? Not push you to do something that you shouldn't or can't do, right? To recognize what is true in the moment. And the idea of yoga is all about the breath, because then it can help us sense where we are in our bodies, right? So the movement of whatever movement we need or are capable of today is what is true today. So it's that same idea of using it to recognize what's true in our experience today, but that it's always changing. The breath is always changing, even though it's the same, it's like the same breath in and out, but it's not. It's every breath is a new moment. And that's where we can cultivate wonder and awe as well, because every breath is a new moment. So we can use like all of these different pieces, and while I don't know, I mean, some people would say it's not really spiritual, but I think that's exactly the making of meaning, because when we go beyond just like the calming in this moment, when we can open up to see the world around us like that, that's where God is. God is that, is the presence around us. And the fact that we, that our breathing just works the way it does, it invites a sense of mystery and awe and wonder into our lives in every moment, not just in certain moments, but the possibility exists at any moment. Any other thoughts or questions? Mm-hmm. Well, so I wish for you in the days ahead for moments of awe and wonder. Next Thursday, watch. We're actually going to do this at 9. I have a conflict in the middle of the day, so I know that might present a conflict for some of you. I'm sorry, but rather than canceling, I just moved it. I think that's the only week in the summer there's another week that I'm away, but I needed to shift the time for next Thursday. So you'll see, it'll be at 9:00.
9 is fine. I'm up early anyway.
Big, like 9:00. I'm sure somebody will come on at 12, but what can I do? So it'll be 9 next Thursday, and we'll go back to 12. Okay.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful week. And maybe I'll see some of you Shabbat.
Or tomorrow morning. Isn't that challah baking?
Tomorrow morning. We're baking
challah. I forgot. Online? The recipe is online?
Yeah.
The recipe is online, and it was in the Daily Digest. I think Emily put a link to it.
That's
right?
What I knew there was coming up. I knew I had to do that. All right.
I have to go borrow yeast if I can get the yeast.
I have a little bit of yeast. So do you have all the ingredients ready, or should you be mixing it ahead of time at 9:00?
No, have the ingredients ready. I'm going to show you how to, like, so the first, at 9, we're going to like talk about challah and putting it all together and mixing it. So everybody's comfortable doing that, and show you how to like let it sit for a while. And then at 1:00, we'll come back together and we'll do some braiding.
Okay.
Then you got to bake it on your own, and you can send me pictures later. Or show me on Shabbat. We can all have challah when we come together at 7:00. Every week you can show everybody your challot.
Yeah. Is it better to have the mixer with the dough hook, or it doesn't matter?
You could do it by hand, but I use a mixer with a dough hook.
It's easy. Okay, that's, yeah. I didn't know if one's better than the other.
Okay, I'm glad you reminded me. I had it on, I remembered I had, there was something for Friday to do in the morning, so.
Okay. Now I have to wake up early enough.
My friend in Delaware sent me some yeast. We went quickly to Giant this morning and get some prescriptions. There was no yeast again. So my friend in Delaware had got some and mailed it to me in an envelope a while ago. So we've been sparingly using it.
It comes and goes. Like, I think I saw it in packets at, where did I see it in packets? I mean, I might have seen it in packets at Harris Teeter last week.
Okay, because my husband, he does the shopping. He doesn't, figures he's going in all the stores, so he's been looking. But a friend of mine said she has a jar of it, so I can now.
Sprouts seems to be pretty good about having it.
Sprouts? Okay, in Herndon.
All right. See you tomorrow then.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.